Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Florida Alternative Medicine and Old School Labs. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we talk about the history of bodybuilding. And I'm your host, John Hansen. And happy March. Today is March 1st. Spring is right around the corner. It was just New Year's. Seems like weeks ago, and now we're heading into March. So happy March, everybody. Happy spring. See, the sun is coming up earlier now out here in Florida, and it's never really cold out here, but we had a couple cold days, but I'm sure it'll be warm pretty soon. Anyways, on the show today, we have part two of our interview with Gary Bartlett. Gary is a photographer from Canada, and for many, many years, he worked in the bodybuilding industry, mostly for Bob Kennedy in Muscle Mag. And on today's part of the seminar, we're going to start off talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Arnold was a really good friend of Bob Kennedy. And actually, for a while, he stopped writing for Weider's magazine, and he had a question and answer column in Muscle Mag, which I think Weider was kind of upset about. And there was one point where Arnold actually sued Bob Kennedy in Muscle Mag. So we're going to talk about that today with our interview with Gary. We're also going to talk about when Bob Kennedy passed away, which was a very sad event. In fact, I just saw this on Facebook, on our, you know, how they have those Facebook memories or Facebook stories or whatever. So I think Bob has been gone now, I think probably like 8 years, I think since 2012. So it's been a long time already. Time is flying. And we finish off our interview with Gary, where he talks about where he went down to DeLand, Florida, and he was covering some of the stuff that Arthur Jones was doing with Mike Mentzer and Boyer Coe and Casey Viator and I think Ray Mentzer. And this was probably early 80s, like around 1982. So that's going to be some interesting discussion. Anything with Arthur Jones is always interesting, right? So we are going to have part two of our interview with Gary Bartlett coming up in a second. Before we do that, I want to mention that we are brought to you by our sponsor, who is Old School Labs. I have been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. It's the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner called Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, which is their two-stage pre-workout, or Vintage Brawn, which is the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is also the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banut and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order when you go to their website, which is at oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right, and we have the Arnold Classic coming up next weekend. I will be leaving on Thursday morning from Tampa, flying out to Columbus, and I will be out there all 4 days. So I'm going to cover whatever events I want to cover. I'm not really working for anybody. I'm not working a booth, so I can just walk around and go wherever I want to go. I'm just probably going to try and get some interviews for this podcast, for Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I know Lee Haney will probably be there and a lot of the old school bodybuilders. So whoever I can grab, whoever I can do interviews with, I'm just going to probably do some quick, short interviews, and we'll put that all together. And maybe I'll have that for you guys next week if we don't have any other guests. So we'll see what happens. But I'm looking forward to going. I haven't been there in like 4 years, so it should be fun. And I want to mention, of course, my seminar, my big bodybuilding seminar is coming up on March 21st and 22nd. If you are interested in going, we have a few spots left. Just go to johnhansenfitness.com. That's my website. And look under seminars, and you can register there. And I am still offering that 2-for-1 deal. So if you pay for one spot on the seminar, you will get to bring a friend, bring whoever you want. You can bring a relative, you can bring a training partner, you can bring your loved one, your significant other, your spouse, whoever you want to bring, your son, your daughter. But you will be able to go 2-for-1 at the seminar, which is going to be a 2-day bodybuilding seminar. We will cover everything bodybuilding related, training, nutrition, genetics, workouts, how you can make progress, how you can plan your workouts to keep making progress, how you overcome weak points, everything. Nutrition, supplements, how to put together a diet. It's going to be part classroom and part in the gym. So the first half of the day, each day on Saturday and Sunday, will be a lecture series, like in the classroom, where we'll be talking about all the different subjects. And then we will go into the gym and the second part of the day, and we will do hands-on training. I'm going to show you all the productive or most efficient exercises for each body part, and I'm going to make sure everybody knows how to do them. So this is really, really going to be a seminar that's going to be worth it, because you are going to save years of trial and error. So if you're interested in coming, again, go to johnhansonfitness.com. We have the 2-for-1 special, and I hope to see you guys there. I hope it's a real success, because I plan on doing more of these and hopefully doing them around the country, maybe even around the world. That's my goal. All right. And then after our interview with Gary today, we're going to have an article, and I believe this was from a 1979 issue of Muscle Builder magazine sent to us by our good friend, Pat Comer. Pat always sends me these great articles, and I appreciate it, Pat. I think Pat is also one of our Patreon subscribers. So I really appreciate all your support, Pat. You are always sending these articles. So this was an interview that Arnold did for the Herald Examiner, and they reprinted it in Muscle Builder. It's called Pumping Arnold, and it's a really, really great article. So right after we get done with our interview with Gary Bartlett, do not shut off your podcast and keep listening, because I'm going to read this article from, I believe it was a 1979 issue of Muscle Builder magazine sent to us by Pat Comer. All right, I got a couple of nice emails this week, so I definitely wanted to read those. If you guys want to email me about the show, my email address is naturalolympia@gmail.com, and you can just send anything that's on your mind. Let me know what you think about the show, and if you have any suggestions, any comments, any criticisms, or any suggestions for guests, just let me know. All right, I got an email from Mike Testani from Canada. He said, "Hey, John, I'm still loving the podcast, and you're doing an amazing job. However, I did find the Gary Bartlett interview rather melancholy. I figured he would be more upbeat, but all he did was lament about how bodybuilding is no longer the same. We all know that. Instead of whining so much, I would hope people would concentrate more on celebrating the past instead of comparing it to a different era and complaining about everything. Anyway, I always love Bartlett's pics and articles, especially all the pics with him and all those hot girls. In the magazines, he always looked like he had his own harem of hot babes. I always envied him for that. That said, I'm curious to listen to the second part of Gary Bartlett's interview. Hopefully, it'll pick up speed. As for the Zane interview, I thought it was great. However, I have two questions. One, do people know that Zane was preparing to do the 1985 Olympia? And two, does Frank Zane have bad luck on his bike? I ask because in the April 1986 issue of Muscle Mag International, on page 11 in the Muscle Go Round section, it states, quote, "Nasty hounds." Few people know that Frank Zane was actually training for the Brussels IFBB Olympia. But while cycling with his wife, they were attacked by two vicious guard dogs. Zane's wife was uninjured, but Frank had his upper arm ravaged by the hounds. Hence, he missed the show. We trust that those 18 inches are on the mend, Frank. So apparently he's had two contest-altering accidents on his bike, if the article's true. I hope you'll ask him about that if you interview him again. P.S. I was going through some old mags. As for oldies, I have an Ironman from 1965, a few from 1966, and a Strength and Health from August 1956 with a bodybuilder named Monty Wolford, who was the first to popularize the sissy squat on the cover. Maybe ask your audience if anyone out there can beat those dates. Yeah, I don't think I have any from that early in the 50s for sure. I might have some from the 60s. But that was interesting about Frank Zane. I do remember that now that Mike mentions that in his email here. I do remember reading that in Muscle Mag, and I totally forgot to mention that to Frank. As far as I was concerned, he was done after 83, and he made it sound like that in the interview, that after he got that fourth place, because I always remember Frank saying that he wanted to retire at 41 because Bill Pearl retired at 41. So yeah, but I do remember reading that in Muscle Mag, so if I ever get a chance to interview Frank again, I will ask him about that. I got another letter here from Rob Beardsmore, and he says, "Hi, John. First, I can thank you for all your fantastic interviews on your podcast. They're an incredible insight into the golden era, which we all really love. Your interviews take me back to the workouts I had as a teen while imagining Defendus and Platts, etc., training like crazy. I, like yourself, found bodybuilding in 1977 at age 13, where I noticed a health and strength magazine at the newsagents. It was the one with the 1977 Mr. Universe on the cover, Bertil Fox and Tony Emmett. So no wonder I got hooked. Then I noticed pumping iron in the window of a bookshop. I competed several times and I became a gym owner for a while, and I was lucky enough to see some incredible physiques over here in England, including Fox on a few occasions. His arm were like your average jogger's waist. I also sat next to Craig Munson once. Also, I saw Eduardo Kowak, Robbie, and Scalak. I had Ernie Taylor do a seminar at my gym, which was great. He only lived a few miles away. I particularly enjoyed Corey's interview, Jerry Branham's, Co., and to be honest, they're all the highlight of the week. I'm a busy building contractor now, so it's a breath of fresh air amongst all the work. I'm still training, and I'm enjoying it as much as ever. A pal of mine had a gym in London, and he's got some great stories, too. I'll pop those to you if you'd like. Yes, please. Secondly, thanks for your training videos. They're brilliant, and credit where it's due. You look great. Well done, John. Thanks again for keeping it all alive and giving us the enormous privilege to listen to the champs. I don't think I'd ever be able to hear the guys speak as they do. All the best, John. Take care. Best regards, Rob Beardsmore. And Rob is from the UK. All right. Thank you very much, Rob. And thank you, Mike, for those great emails. And thank you for enjoying my training seminars. Yeah, if you guys are interested in checking out my YouTube channel, I am putting my training videos up on YouTube each week. I don't think I got one up there this week because I was sick at the beginning of the week, and then I couldn't find anybody to film any. So I had to work out by myself and didn't have anybody to film the videos. But hopefully next week, I want to get my leg training workout up there. And I'll be going to Columbus on Thursday, and I know I'm going to train with a couple people. I did an interview with Scott McNally for his Advices Radio this week. So that is on Apple iTunes. You can check that out, Advices Radio. And we talked about natural bodybuilding and how you have to train and how you have to diet when you're a natural bodybuilder. So that's interesting. And that's going to be up on YouTube. Scott said he's going to send me the interview, and I'm going to put it up on my YouTube channel. You can check that out also on my YouTube channel. And I'm going to train with Scott hopefully next week and maybe a couple other people. So if I do that, I will film those workouts too, because that'll be interesting because I'll be training with other people. On our Apple podcast, I got a couple of reviews here also. I want to read those because I appreciate you guys leaving comments on Apple podcast. If you listen to our podcast on Apple, please go on there and leave a review. I would really appreciate it. And I think that helps get the show out there more. So that'll help us overall. So this one was from Stephen Kraft. He sent this on January 30th. He gave us 5 stars. He said, excellent show. I look forward to John's show every week. It helps me get through a night of work. His guests are true icons of the sport, hence the name Bodybuilding Legends. With his own history in bodybuilding and positive attitude, he's able to reach out to guys that have been out of the sport for decades and even some that have been hiding from it. John has great integrity. It's displayed in his interviews. His guests are always comfortable answering questions, and there's never an awkward moment. All right. Thank you, Stephen. This letter is from Corey Everton. And Corey sent this on February 17th, gave us also 5 stars. He said, I love the show with Corey Everson. I'm a new follower of bodybuilding, and I love how sweet she is. I want to go to all the movies she was in and watch them. And this one was from John Min. He sent this on the 22nd of February, just last week, and he also gave us 5 stars. He said, great podcast for historic bodybuilding. I said, thanks, John, for very entertaining episodes. So thank you guys very much. Commenting on the Apple podcast. Again, if you haven't done that, if you could do that, I would really, really appreciate that. We got some more comments also on our Gary Bartlett show on our YouTube channel, my YouTube channel. This one was from Bob Lickman. It said, face it, for all of us old school guys, the bodybuilding world has come to an end. It's now monster building thanks to all the drugs and judges whose only standard is bubble guts. No show will ever rival the fantastic shows that Weider produced in the 1960s and 1970s. No Mr. Olympia contest will ever rival, for excitement, the early Olympia contest. No computer or social media will ever rival the excitement of going to the newsstand every month to pick up the latest issues of the various magazines. Yeah, I got to agree with that. Say what you will about Weider, Hoffman, etc. In retrospect, bodybuilding would never have existed without them. By the way, regarding Chris Dickerson, I trained in the same gyms that he did back in the 60s and 70s And I always thought he looked his best when he competed in the NATO Mr. Universe contest in London. He had, at that time, an extremely elegant physique. You had to see him in person. Wonderful personality as well. If it weren't for Arnold, he would have won the Olympia in 1980, in my opinion. Andrew Welch said, I love Muscle Mag International. It was my favorite mag in the 80s. Odessa File said, Gary, that's a very good impression of Ben Weider. I was at the 1979 Canadian Championships in Montreal, and I attended a meeting where Ben Weider spoke. I also met Jimmy Caruso and Robert Kennedy, who were very friendly. Robert Damaris said, great interview, John. Yeah, like I said, I think bringing back bodybuilding couples would help bring some excitement again. When you think about figure ice skating, for example, you have men competing, women competing, and then you have couples. You and Gary nailed it with what you said about the magazines. It's sad to see them go, but times have changed. You and Gary pointed out the stuff that we older guys miss about magazines where the young people today never notice. This was Card Warped. He said, I love these interviews, John. Thanks. Trapped Drip said, brilliant work. Keep it up. Would you like to be YouTube friends? Sure. Jerry Anuzzi said, Gary always gives a great review of the contest in Ironman. I always enjoy reading his analysis. He would do a summary of each competitor one by one, starting with the last place guy up until the winner. I like to read them because he wasn't afraid to offer his opinion. I still have a lot of those old Ironman mags, and I read through them every once in a while. Thanks for this interview. As I listen to this, I'm going through my Ironmans, and I see Gary's photos and the summaries of the 1980 through the 1983 Mr. Olympia contest. Yeah, I think we even read one or two of Gary's reviews of the Mr. Olympia. I think the one that Samir won in 83, that was one written by Gary for Ironman. This one is from Crazy635. He said, John, you really deserve more subscriptions. Radford McDermott said, Samir should have won in 82. I would be surprised if it was rigged for Chris because he did favors for Masonic judges. And the Spritz said, John and Gary, I'm sure many people back then wondered why Bertel Fox never won the Big O. And then after we saw how bad his posing was, we understood. Compare his posing to Frank Zane, and you could include Casey in that group of bad posers. P.S. I agree with Gary about Muhammad Mockaway. And then finally, we got a couple comments on my Facebook page. I have a John Hansen business page. And Peter Schuler said, this was a very engaging podcast, John. I very much appreciated that tiny yet very important pearls of wisdom from your guest, in which you and Gary Bartlett mentioned that Tony Pearson and Albert Beckles squat only 135 pounds for 7 grueling sets of 20 reps each set. As an aging bodybuilder myself, such snippets of information are very helpful to know. The muscle doesn't know how heavy the weight is. Thanks, John, once again. Time to put this theory into practice. Deadlifts and barbell hack squats. And my friend Pete Fancher on my Facebook page said, another great classic interview. Great job, John, as always. All right. Thank you very much, guys, for your comments. Again, if you want to send me an email, you can send it to naturalolympia@gmail.com, and I would love to read your email on the air. Or you can go on Apple Podcasts and leave us a review there. I would appreciate either one, or my YouTube page. My YouTube page, of course, is John Hansen. All right. So that is it for our emails. Before we get to our second part of our interview with Gary Bartlett, I want to mention our other sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn body fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, flalternativemeds.com. And tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they will give you a free consultation. Plus, they will give you 20% off your first order. All right, so that is it for our opening. Here is our interview with Gary Bartlett, one of the best photographers in the bodybuilding world. Part two of our interview with Gary right now. Here we go. Hey, Gary, I wanted to ask you about Arnold because those that don't know, when Bob Kennedy started Muscle Mag, he was pretty good friends with Arnold. And I remember some of my favorite articles about Arnold where when Bob went out with Arnold a few times in the late 70s, this is before Arnold had his big movie career, and it was right in between that period when Arnold retired from bodybuilding, and he was trying to make it in the movies, but he wasn't really making it yet, but he was still making a lot of money in real estate and stuff. And then his first big movie, of course, was Conan in 82. But I remember he was talking about Bob went to California and he partied with Arnold one time, and I think he stayed at Arnold's house, and then the next day he felt terrible, and Arnold told him to go in the bathroom and stick his finger down his throat so he would throw up and just to feel better and stuff like that. But Arnold was working for Bob, I think in the late 70s, right, where he had his own question and answer column. And I think Weider got pissed off about that, right?
Yeah, I believe so. That was probably the case. And so you got to remember, Bob and Arnold have a little connection with their heritage or their lineage, because Bob's father was Austrian.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that now that you mentioned
it. Yeah, of course, Arnold's an Austrian. See, Bob's father was Austrian, and there's quite a story about his father escaped from the Nazi Germans when they came into Austria, and he made his way, in fact, had to sleep in trees trying to make his way to the Swiss border to get away from the Nazis, because he didn't want to be part of it. So he escaped. The story goes he escaped to Switzerland and made his way to England, and that's where he met Bob's mother, who was British. So they ended up getting married.
And, oh, wow.
Yeah, and what Bob's father did in England was he helped train Jewish commandos to go back and fight the Nazis in the Second World War. That's one of the things he was doing.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was help train them. That's what I was told. And he also was a brilliant man. At one time, he was the European chess champion. Now, that's something.
Apparently this is Bob's father.
Yes, apparently he could win a room, and there'd be a whole room full of people playing chess, and he would play against the whole bunch of them. Like, he'd go up and down the aisles making moves. And then the sad part is, as brilliant as he was in his day, he ended up contacting Alzheimer's and passed away. Mm. He lived to be quite elderly, but he passed away with Alzheimer's, which was sad. But yeah, and so getting back to what you said, so that was kind of the kindred spirit with Arnold and Bob, where they both have Austrian, ancestry or whatever. Bob is half Austrian. Mm-hmm. So then anybody who was, coming along in bodybuilding and stuff, of course, Bob had an extreme passion for bodybuilding. He loved it. I remember him telling me about the time him and his friend there, Gino Edwards, who went under Johnny Fitness, hitchhiked to London to go to the Mr. Universe contest when they were just kids. And mm-hmm. they ran into Reg Park outside, and it was just like, it was, like the lightning god had come to earth to see Reg Park.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They couldn't believe Reg Park. I mean, he was just unbelievable. Of course, he was the Arnold of the day. So
yeah,
Bob and them would have seen, Arnold back in the day competing, I suppose, at the NABBA, and then over time. Mm-hmm. But Bob did form a relationship with Arnold, and they got to be friends. And Bob would go down to Santa Monica in the early years and get stuff for the magazine, spend time down there. And he used to drive Arnold around that Volkswagen, you imagine, because Bob was about 6 feet tall too, and Bob worked with Bob. So the two of them crammed into that little Volkswagen. That must have been something to see. See them pull up the Gold's Gym and both climb out of the Volkswagen, because that's what Joe gave Arnold. But yes, they got, and the funniest thing, and I know you wanted to hear the story where I mentioned it to you when we were chatting back and forth on Messenger about the time that Bob got in a mess with Arnold over the lawsuit. And that's it's an interesting story. What happened with that, John, was this was, I think, back maybe in the 90s, somewhere in the 90s. I'm not sure about the date.
Okay. A little bit later.
Somewhere around that time. It was very quiet. There wasn't a whole, there wasn't much said about it. I was one of the people from the inside that knew about it. And it wasn't a thing that Arnold and Bob personally got fighting each other. It just turned into a bad situation based on somebody else's missteps. There was a kid in Montreal who came up with the idea of opening up Arnold's Gyms, the name Arnold Gym. He was in his 20s. He was friends with Ben Weider's son, Mark Weider. I think they were friends anyway. But I don't think Weider's son had anything to do with the gym or anything, but they were friends. But anyway, he opened up the gym in Montreal. I don't know if he opened up a chain or more than one or whatever, franchised them. I know he had one of his own. He's an Italian kid. I forget his name now. Anyway, he got to be very successful. The gym got better and better and got more popular. And so what he did then, I think he started his own line of clothing. I remember seeing some of the clothing. It had Arnold with a picture of Arnold on the front posing, and it had Arnold across it. So people were buying them like crazy. So yeah. he had contacted Bob to sell the merchandise. I'm not sure if he had food supplements too with the Arnold name. But anyway, Bob contacted him or something. He got in touch with Bob, wanted to know Bob wanted to move his clothing line through Muscle Mag. See, Bob used to have Muscle Mag stores. He had two or three of them. He had one.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. He had one right out of his main place. And then he had one downtown Toronto. And I'm not sure, you know, how many he had at the time. But he was displaying them in his stores. And they were selling pretty good because everybody wanted Arnold clothes at the time. So Arnold got onto it, and Arnold never clued in that he should register his name, Arnold. You know, who'd think, eh?
But the kid did. Even in the 90s, huh? That's crazy.
Yeah, and the kid registered it. I think it was the 90s. I don't think it was as far back as the 80s. I think it was the 90s. So the kid registered the name. So Arnold approached him to try to buy the name from him. You know, he's going to give him, I think he was going to offer him a decent amount of money for it. And the kid was, I call him a kid, but he's in his 20s. He's a kid by my standards now, but back at the time he probably wasn't. But he was a bit arrogant. He thought he had something there pretty good. And he said, no, he wouldn't sell it. He wouldn't sell it, the name, to Arnold and cease using it. So, Arnold said, you better not be promoting it as if I'm involved, because you could open yourself up, you know, to a lawsuit. Mm-hmm. So what Arnold's people did was send people into the gym to join and ask them, you know, is Arnold involved with this? You know, it's, you got the Arnold name here. We should, you know, we're joining up, you know, because of the connection with Arnold. That's the thing. And apparently the guy led them to believe that Arnold was involved. So they had him then. Arnold launched a big lawsuit, fraud and what have you, using his name and for to sell his products and whatever. You know, he'd have some good lawyers for sure. So yeah. Bob got something summons or something that said you ceased to exist selling any of this clothing line in your stores because it's not officially authorized by Arnold Schwarzenegger. So Bob did pull the line out of his stores, but for some reason there was a miscommunication with the store in downtown Toronto. So the guy still had the tank tops and stuff sitting on mannequins in the front window when some of Arnold's people went by to investigate. Here they were. They saw all these. Mm-hmm. So then they launched a lawsuit against Bob. So this became a real problem because the Arnold Classic was coming up. And Bob was a very stubborn man. Bob sometimes is very hard to reason with, talk sense to. And he got stuck his feet in and wouldn't budge. And, you know, he was going to fight it and do this and do that. And we were telling Bob, no, Bob, you know, you don't know the ramifications of, you can't fight Arnold. I mean, you got to work something out. You got to find out, you know, how to deal with this, because we never get into any of the other shows. I mean, who, you know, how's your magazine going to be relevant if you're not covering IFBB shows? And so in the Arnold, seeing the thing Bob also had, he was running ads for the Arnold Classic in Muscle Mag. Well, he pulled the ads out. So it just started to escalate. And so we were in a mess with that, and we didn't quite know what to do. So I think Johnny Fitness started trying to reason with Bob. He said, Bob, we got to reach a solution because the Arnold's coming up, and, you know, we can't win against Arnold. I mean, you know, and Bob said, well, I don't know if we can work something. So anyway, they spoke to me. See, I had a pretty good relationship, personal relationship with Jim Lorimer. So I called, I actually called Jim Lorimer up one night, late one night, and he spoke to me. And I said, Jim, you know what's going on? And he said, yeah. And I said, oh, is there something like, what do we need to do to solve this problem? I said, Bob really doesn't want to, you know, fight with Arnold. He really doesn't want this lawsuit. He doesn't, and he didn't, the clothing thing wasn't intentional. It was a mistake. And, you know, what can we do to solve the problem? Because, you know, it's a relationship that you guys always had with Muscle Mag that worked out well. Because, see, Bob always had booths there, too. So Jim said, well, yeah. You know, and I said, what do we got to do? You know, and Jim said, well, if you can get an ad in Muscle Mag advertising the Arnold Classic, I think I can convince maybe Arnold maybe to drop the lawsuit against him. So I got back to Bob and told him, you know, the problem was we had a deadline on the printing because it was a couple of months before the Arnold was coming up and there's no ad. And we didn't know we could get the ad in time before the show to show them that, you know, this was what they wanted to get done. So after some, you know, scary moments and some running around and trying to get, you know, get pressure on the printers and stuff, they finally got the ad in and all was forgotten and it ended well. We ended up getting to the Arnold and it was all over and thank heavens that chapter was done in that situation. So
wow, yeah, I never knew about any of that.
No, that was kept pretty quiet. It's all past history now with all, you know, but it was, and that's the type of guy that Jim Lorimer is. I mean, a guy that you can reason with. I mean, he's a wonderful man, and very few in the industry that is respect. Everybody respects Jim Lorimer. Great, great guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob and Arnold continued on, continued their relationship, got good again. And in fact, the last week of Bob's life, Arnold personally flew up to Toronto, I think in his private jet or whatever, and went to visit Bob to pay his respects. Not after Bob passed, but while Bob was still alive, Arnold went to see him.
Yeah, I remember the pictures from that, yeah.
Now that says a whole lot about Arnold and their relationship. And they tell me that Bob was pretty bad shape at that time because he was dying of cancer. He had a rough battle. And when Arnold came in, he perked right up. It's just like there was nothing wrong with him again. He just come right to life.
Wow, really?
Yeah, when he saw Arnold, that's what I was told. So, I mean, Arnold, that was something for Arnold to do that, you know, take his time.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
So, I mean.
What kind of a cancer did Bob die of?
It started out a few years ago. Bob had gotten a growth in the top of his head.
Mm-hmm.
And it just wouldn't heal. He went and went to a doctor, and the doctor didn't diagnose it as cancer at the time. He didn't think there was anything wrong with it. Sent him home, so Bob ended up it not healing. So Bob went back to a cancer specialist. I think it was a doctor who was friends with one of the bodybuilders Bob knew who treated him for cancer. So he went to him. I think that's how it went. And got diagnosed that it was skin cancer. And he had a big chunk of the scalp cut out. And it healed over, and he seemed okay for a year or two. Then about a year or two later, he got sick. It's like he had a bad cold. He was just tired. He had cold chills, no energy, like he had pneumonia or the flu or something, and it just wouldn't go away.
Right.
And finally, he went for a full checkup. And when I think he even had like a mini stroke, which brought it straight to a head. He had like a mini stroke or something. So when they went in and x-rayed him and everything, there was cancer pretty well all through him. It started, it was in his lung, and then apparently he even had some on his heart. That's what caused the mini stroke. Cells or something. That's what the word was. So anyway, he got, because I spoke to some doctors that knew the file, and they told me this was in Columbus. And they told me they saw the x-rays, and they said he didn't have very long to live after. So I went right through him really fast. So I speculate that it may never, ever completely got out of the system from unless the metastasized from his head there. And cells must have been dormant, and something triggered him again. And because he was under a lot of stress at the time, because that's when the internet was coming on and advertising was being cut back, and the magazines were starting to feel the crunch from, you know, the internet. And I know that Muscle Tech was cutting back ads. You know, like Muscle Tech was keeping Muscle Mag going because they were spending a lot of money on ads and things at the time. Well, then they started to realize that, you know, budget-wise, they could spend it elsewhere. So they started cutting back on their advertising in Muscle Mag. So Bob was faced with a huge budget problems trying to keep things going because he had at one time about 100 employees up there. You know, he was in a huge, huge building as well. That building was very, very expensive for him. So it was kind of a perfect storm with everything coming in on him at once. I think what was keeping him going was Toscarino's books. They were publishing a lot of books at the time that that she was being promoted, and they were doing very well. So that revenue helped, but I think the inevitable was coming in. And I think the stress was weakened him, and I think it just got a hold of him. And he didn't live very long after he contacted it. And I remember talking to Johnny Fitness quite a bit about it. He'd say to me, Bob would come in, and didn't look very good, and he had this cough. I don't think there would have been much they could have done for him, even if they had caught it earlier.
If they wouldn't have misdiagnosed that first time, maybe they would have got it all then.
They might have they might have at the very start, because you know, the longer you let it go, of course, the bigger hole it gets in your bloodstream and everything metastasizes. Yeah. It's a very insidious disease, as we both know. People have lost their lives to it, but it was a sad time. And remember that year he died, I think, in April. Yeah, that year in March, he got Arnold awarded him the Life Achievement Award. I think he was still alive in March for the Arnold Classic that year, but Bob could not go and get it because he was so ill. And Toscarino.
What year did he pass away, Gary?
I think it was 2012.
Maybe 2012,
somewhere around there. Seems so long ago now. But yet,
it does.
Yeah, and of course the magazine's been out of print now for a while, because the magazine did sell all the titles. Toscarino inherited everything, and then she sold the titles to a company, I think, in California. I think they printed a couple of issues of Muscle Mag, and then they stopped publishing it. But I do see Oxygen still on the stands. One of the magazines was Oxygen, and that's still being published. But Muscle Mag didn't last very long after it got sold.
I wonder if she made any good money for the titles.
I don't know what she got for them. Certainly, the way that the times were, I can't see anybody investing a whole lot buying titles anymore.
Right.
Because, we've seen what happened with those Weeders. I mean, they were geniuses with the timing they got.
They sold there for $300 million, right? Something like that.
Yeah. I think David Pecker got a pounding, no pun intended, from his shareholders when he paid that kind of money and watched the demise of some great magazines. And it wasn't because the material wasn't good. It was just that was the coming of the age. The internet. So you can't blame really anybody. I mean, it's just like we talked about earlier, it's a time that you and I have great fond memories of. I mean, I had some, I used to lay awake at night thinking about titles for articles, like thinking of schemes to write articles. I mean, my mind was going all the time.
Bob had to be doing that all the time too, right? I mean,
he was writing books. He'd write Bob was very disciplined in his writing. Like he would write a chapter or a page every morning, and, you know, a chapter a week. I mean, he was a prolific. I remember sharing some time with him in England. He was just working on Hardcore Bodybuilding. Remember when that came out, Hardcore Bodybuilding?
Yeah.
I remember.
And BFIT was one of the ones, early ones, too.
And I remember it was around the time of that 82 Olympia that we were talking about. I went over and stayed with him and his wife at the time in their flat. He'd rented a flat in England, and we went down to Buckingham Palace, and he was taking shots of me with hardcore bodybuilding on a shirt that I wore. And we went to Trafalgar Square, where there are all these pigeons and stuff, and he wanted to get a picture with me with this hardcore bodybuilding thing for promotion with all the pigeons flying around. It was a great time. That, along with Arnold's bodybuilding books, was one of the early ones that was popular. And imagine now trying to sell, how do you make out, John, selling your bodybuilding books? Do you have any problem moving them?
The last few I wrote, I sold on Amazon. So it seems like they do pretty well in the beginning, but then the sales kind of dwindle down. Unless you can find some way to really market it, you know.
You do them digitally or just print?
No, they're print. But I should add the digital part because I think it would help with the sales.
Yeah, if you could set up where you people could buy them digitally, and then you could do it that way and send them like that. But because you wonder how books do these days in bookstores and stuff. And then, of course, the market now for bodybuilding is not, like it was either. It's
right.
And everybody's online now looking up. Everybody's a trainer now online. If you notice that.
Yeah.
And, everybody's a superstar trainer. So what could you teach them? They didn't already know.
Right.
But no, John, I've had some great memories, thanks to Muscle Mag, and some great memories from some of the shows. But the 82 one, I think, was the forgotten Mr. Olympia. And then when we went to 83.
Yeah, you're right.
And then we went to 83. That sort of got brought back again with Samir winning. I mean, Samir looks fantastic at that show. And
you think Samir was much better in 83 than 82?
I think he was, yes. I think he was sharper.
Yeah.
I think he had gotten the bit of the water out, and he was just a little more mature.
Mm.
It was his show. I mean, he had everything. He was flawless. I mean, and that was the last Mr. Olympia that weighed under 200 pounds, I think. I don't know if Samir weighed 200 at the time, or he was close to it, maybe, but that was with the...
I think he was in the 190s.
Yeah, and then Lee Haney got third, and that was the beginning of Lee Haney the next year. And that was the last time we ever had a Mr. Olympia that was under 200 pounds. It just got bigger and bigger.
Yeah. I talk about that show a lot, quite a few times, because I think when you look at 83, you saw the contrast between guys like McAway and Zane and Samir, and then you had other guys like Haney and Bertel Fox, and they're all in the mix. They're all together, where later on, of course, they just went with the mass. But back then, they were still rewarding the symmetry, and they were rewarding posing, like McAway had the great posing. So it was that was an interesting contest, how the judges were intelligent enough or experienced enough where they could reward different aspects of a physique, like symmetry or posing, and they could contrast that with someone like Bertel Fox, who was so big,
Very true, and Bertel was the crowd favorite. The German crowd obviously loved that thick, huge, thick, muscle that he had, and loved his muscular poses. But you also got to remember, too, John, down the road, when Haney came along, there was still room for the smaller guys under 200, because remember, Lee Labrada had a good run. I mean, Lee was under 200.
Mm-hmm.
He got second on several occasions. And then you got to also remember Rich Gasperi came along and was the first guy to show the striated glutes, which, set everybody crazy. And he was probably under 200 as well. So, I mean, Lee was the big guy, but there was still... After Lee, there was still the smaller, shapely guys. Still was a place for them. And then when you got to Dorian Yates, that was the end of the little guys.
I think the 80s were probably my favorite time for bodybuilding. 70s, of course, too, but the 80s were really great, because I think the physiques were obviously more improved in the 80s than the 70s, but they were still relatable, where you could look at the guys and say, hey, if you were a teenager and you were reading the magazines and you saw the guys from the 80s, you would say, I could look like that, and then that would motivate you to train so hard.
Well, that's for me, like with Frank Zane. I mean, a guy, Frank Zane, 185 or 187 pounds. I mean, most guys could think, geez, if I can train and look like Frank Zane. He's not that big a guy. I mean, it's a whole different story trying to get muscles that look like Frank Zane's, but you certainly had something that you could thought you could achieve by training. Certainly you couldn't look like, you certainly couldn't look like Arnold. I mean, Arnold was a unique very few people looked like Arnold with those biceps and those pecs and, you know, it's what he had going for him. But with Frank, you know, with Frank Zane, those guys, I mean, you could something that an average guy could hope for. And now it's just, you know, insanity. I mean, the monsters that are out there, especially with after Dorian, and then you had Ronnie Coleman. I mean, Ronnie Coleman was just in another, you know, the spaceship landed on Earth and Ronnie Coleman got off it, you'd swear he was from another planet. I mean, he just had so much muscle as everybody else. I mean,
now you look at the guys and you just, I don't see how anybody can relate to him.
Oh, it just hung. I mean, the muscle just hung off his body. I mean, he just stood there and it just hung. I mean, it's just so thick and slab upon slab of muscle. And
And
he had amazing biceps. I mean, those peak biceps. I remember going backstage when we used to get back at some of the Olympias and Ronnie'd be pumping up back there and doing like bicep curls and that. And I was just shocked. I couldn't lift my camera. I was, you know, I said, I'd have to kick my ass to get the camera up to shoot it because it just so mesmerizing to see that much peak on the bicep on somebody. And then the thick slabs on his back and the hamstrings and quads. I mean, you know, the only weakness that he had a little weakness in his triceps. I think he tore them at one time and then he might have had a bit of weakness in the stomach area. He never really had that nice etched midsection.
Yeah.
But the rest of them was just amazing. I mean, to see him, you know, now to see him today, it's like, you know, it's hard to believe that he was once that probably the most muscular human that ever walked on Earth, you know, with the low body fat. I saw him get posed once at 300 pounds 6 weeks before the Olympia. It was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. I couldn't believe it. He just was unbelievably, he was hard at that weight too. Just unbelievable. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I agree with you also, John, that the 80s was the best combination of not only great bodybuilders, but also media. I mean, the magazines were in their peak. You had muscle magazines. See, the magazines lost their way, I think, when they started taking all these crazy ads. Remember when they had like 6 and 8 page ads that started out? It started out, it looked like a training article, and then it ended up with an advertisement for supplements. I mean, you had six, I mean, that's when the magazines, you know, that would be started, I think, in the 90s. In the 80s, the magazines were small, but they weren't crammed full of ads. But then when you get into the 90s, they got like 250, 300 pages, but 100 pages would have been ads. I mean, that's when all the supplement companies came along, and that was the peak of the supplement companies were in the 90s. I mean, they were doing millions. You had MuscleTech, and you had EAS, and you had Metrex, and you had, you know, all those great, you know, those companies came along and then started buying ads in the magazines, which allowed them to put, you know, so many more pages in. But that now you don't see that anymore. But the 80s, I think, like you said, the 80s were the best of everything, best of it all.
Yeah.
You know, and then of course things started to, you know, decline a bit with, you know, whichever way you want to look at it. I mean, social media is a great thing, but, you know, for us old dinosaurs, it's we like the old memories. From the days back, you know, then. But the last story, maybe, John, that I mentioned in our emails, were the one where a time I went to Florida to Art Jones's place.
Yeah.
Down in
Atlanta. I wanted to ask you about that, yeah.
Yeah. That was back a couple of years. I think it was either 82 or 83. I was vacationing in Florida, so I conned my wife in to drop me off. They were going to go to Cape Canaveral. I made arrangements with Boyer. Boyer and I got to be pretty good friends over the years. I always liked Boyer. Him and I got along quite well. And so I contacted Boyer about stopping by, and he was going to show me around the place. Arthur had a bunch of these buildings, tin buildings set up where he was filming VHS video stuff that that he was selling. And also Mike, Ray, and Boyer were there working with them. And I think they were doing experiments trying to train on Nautilus with the, you know, training two or three times a week, the heavy duty type stuff. Of course, it was hard for Boyer because he was doing a lot of volume training. And they wanted to see how it would work, just training briefly, hit for about three times a week, half an hour. So anyway, I got there, and Boyer took me into the local cafe, and there was me and Boyer and Ray, and them were there. And he said Arthur was coming in, and I was going to introduce. They were going to introduce me to Arthur. So, of course, Arthur walks in, everything goes quiet, just like one of those shows you see in a Western or something. Everybody in the place goes quiet. So Arthur walks in. Well, Arthur walks in and sits down, and Boyer introduces me to him. He said, "This is Gary Bartlett. He's a writer and author, and he's from Canada. He's Canadian." And Jones looks over at me and he says, "Is a Canadian a human being?" I look at him. I'm like, "What?" And I said, "Arthur." I said, "Arthur, I think you're trying to test me." And he kind of gave a smirk and kind of laughed, and we got along okay. And I didn't really see him much after that. But that's the only interaction I had with Arthur Jones. But Boyer showed me around, and he took me into this one building, and he turned the light on, and there was a 17-foot crocodile in a pen.
Wow, really?
Yeah, this monster crocodile, and Boyer said he had two or three of them there, these monster crocodiles. I mean, it was crazy what was going on there. So then he took me in this building, and he said, "We're filming a video right now." He said, "You can watch it." And the video was the head of the Ku Klux Klan was there, and they were doing an interview with him, the head of the Ku Klux Klan guy. And he was trying to come across as more moderate, like, you know, like trying to get away from the old stereotype of the white sheets and all that. He was dressed in a nice suit, and he was talking normal and all this. So I kind of watched that for a while, and they had all these cameras that they were videotaping it. So then I got sat down and had an interview with Mike Mentzer, and that was just before Mike, I think, went off the rails a few years later. Remember, Mike had all the mental issues and stuff. And he was still bitter over the 80 Olympia. I mean, didn't have very many good things to say about it. He was pretty bitter about the whole industry at the time.
Yeah.
I think he was smoking cigarettes. He wasn't in very good shape. And it was great to see him, but I was a bit disappointed, you know, because I was expecting the Mike Mentzer that I knew from the competitive days.
Right, right.
And Ray was there. Ray was in pretty good shape. Ray was doing he demonstrated some Nautilus equipment for me. I took some photographs of Ray and did an interview with Ray about training and stuff. And Ray was great. And then I had a good chat or two with Boyer. So, it was a great time at that time in my life to meet those guys down there. But I heard later that they didn't last there very long. I think they all left, you know, in a short time after, whether our rhythm or they just quit or whatever. But that was a good memory from those days. Now, were you aware of the fellow, the Canadian that passed away last week or so ago, the big bodybuilder from Ontario? He was a IFBB pro.
What was his name?
Scott Milne.
Oh, yeah. I did hear about that. I heard about that on Dave Palumbo's show.
Yeah, I knew him quite well. He was a really good guy. Saw him compete, saw him win the Canadians. The best he got, I believe, was second in his super heavyweight division. That's how he got his pro card. And he was only 46, so...
That's young.
Yeah, we've lost a lot of the big guys young ages. We lost Greg Kovacs a few years back. He was in his 40s.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't do very well. These big guys who don't seem to have longevity on the side.
No, not at all. Yeah, when I talked to Corey Everson last week, you know, we were talking, of course, about her husband, ex-husband Jeff Everson. But he was in his 60s, but still, he died suddenly, and she was pretty upset about that. But we were talking about how it's smart for these guys to get leaner and smaller as they get older. Yeah. Like Lee Haney, you know, she mentioned Lee Haney, how much smaller he is and leaner, but he's healthy. You know, he looks great. Yeah.
You got to take down the muscle and build up the insides. get you know, yeah, work as hard on the inside as you did on the outside. And if you want to live long.
Yeah.
I did a lot of work with Jeff. I really thought a lot of Jeff. Other than Robert Kennedy, Jeff was one of the best guys to work for. He always paid. He never ripped you off. He always had great ideas for stories. I did a lot of work for him for Planet Muscle, when he was very passionate with that magazine. And I know the last year or two that I worked with him, he was having health issues then. I think Jeff trained very, very, very hard in his day, and I think he pushed himself very, very hard. And I think he had some health issues that may have been responsible in the end for his, you know, he passed away quite young. And he had complained about pains in his legs, I think, and that's a bad sign for a stoker. I think a lot of the guys aren't getting checkups like they should. I mean, you should be going to get, if there's any advice that you or I could give anybody out there who might be listening to this, especially if you're an older bodybuilder, even, you know, even in your 40s, probably go get regular blood work and get your blood pressure checked. And if you're on a lot of stuff or you're taking a lot of stuff, there's no question you're probably going to have high blood pressure and your cholesterol is probably going to be high. And that's the stuff that causes the arteries, you know, to plug up and end up get strokes or heart attacks. And that's what's, I think, taking a lot of these guys, these bigger guys, and that. Now, I don't know what the situation was with Jeff, but I mean, Jeff was, you know, a fairly young man. I mean, he wasn't 70 yet, so.
No, he was in his 60s.
And if he was complaining about leg pain, then that's a sign.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know if he was getting checkups or what, but it was a shock. It came as a shock to me because I really thought a lot of, Jeff and I got along great. We had a lot of, did a lot of business together, and it's a shame. And I mean, I know Corey took it very, very hard. I mean, they were very close.
Yeah.
Even after they were apart, they were still very close. And he was a great guy.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
But, it's funny, I mean, when you think there's another guy who had a great passion for his magazine, that it fell by the wayside too. But you know the biggest thing that, John, when we talk about the magazines, and I think in a way this podcast is sort of like a paying tribute to the magazines, because you and I both are big fans of them, and I work from the inside with them. And my favorite magazine of all was the original Iron Man. I loved that magazine.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I could hardly wait to get that every month in the mail. Fairy Radar. And they always had these simple, down-to-earth stories. There was nothing sensational or no big advertisements. And they were just pure working man's articles, you know. I think probably Roger would agree, because Roger used to do a lot of writing for Iron Man.
Yeah. That's where I first saw Roger's writings, yeah. He used to write about the Olympia in there over here.
Yep, and that's where I got a lot of my writing was in Iron Man as well. And I got to know Perry Radar quite well. He was a lovely man. And the funniest part about Perry, I talked to him on the phone, and we have conversations for a long time, and I never, ever met him in person. I never met Perry in person. It's one of my big regrets.
Yeah.
I worked for his magazine for many years, had a lot of covers on it, worked for him for many years until he sold it to John Bailey. And I never met him, and then he had passed away. Do you know if his wife is still alive?
I don't know, but I'm assuming she isn't.
She'd be fairly elderly now, but that brings back a lot of memories working with Perry, and it's just that simple little magazine that he had, and I think he made a living with it.
I think that was everybody's favorite magazine back in the day. It was probably the first magazine I ever bought when I was a kid.
I remember getting it, because I was used to the Weider magazines. I didn't even know there were any other magazines out there, and I didn't even know there was Muscle Mag until I ran across it. But because the first time I seen a Weider magazine was in a set of weights I bought. I got a set of weights for Christmas. They were Weider weights, and in the box was a Muscle Builder magazine, and I was like, I was fascinated by that. That was crazy.
But, right.
But then I discovered Iron Man, so then I sent for a whole bunch of back issues, and I remember how excited I was when they all came. Like all these back issues.
Right.
They were great. And then I had a relative, he knew I was lifting weights. I was probably 15, 16. He knew I was lifting weights. He said, "Go on down. I've got some old bodybuilding magazines here. going to throw them away. So I went down. There were 19. There were Weider muscle builder for 1952 and 53.
Mm-hmm.
Still have them. I still have them. Still have them.
Do you really? Wow. Yeah, no kidding. Fun. Yeah, you never want to get rid of those. Yeah.
It's funny to see them because there was Clancy Ross, you know, and Art Harris and Dillinger and some of those guys way back then. Rita Robert, and you probably know all those guys. But see, we could talk. We know these guys now, but the guys today, I don't know half them anymore.
No, I don't either. I mean, I can tell you the top 10 in the 82 Olympia, but I can't tell you, you know, the recent ones. I don't remember the top five.
No, yeah, that's right. So will you go to the Arnold, John? You're going to go to it, are you?
Yes, I'll be there this year. Yeah, I haven't gone in a couple of years, but I'm going to go this year.
Now, when you're there, do you do any interviews with anybody?
Yeah, I'm going for this podcast specifically. So I'm going to go to the expo and try and interview a lot of the guys who I can see around. Yeah, probably shorter interviews, but, you know, maybe I can set up some longer ones while I'm out there.
Well, I was going to say, I've reached out to Albert with a message, but he hasn't got back to me. So, Albert, if you happen to be Albert Busek. So, Albert, if you happen to be listening to this podcast, please contact John some way so he can interview you.
I'd love to interview Albert.
We'd love to get you. John would love to get you on there, and I'd love to hear your stories. And so,
I've been trying to get Rick Wayne too.
Oh, Rick would be fantastic. He would be great. I'll tell you someone else, John, you should try and contact before he passes away is Jimmy Caruso.
Because when I interviewed Roy Callender, he said, oh, do you? Okay.
I've got Jimmy's number. Now, I don't know if it's still a number that's in service or not, but I'll message it to you and see if you can contact him. Wouldn't hurt to try because he's 93 now, but he's still very, very sharp. And I had a conversation with him maybe a year or so ago, and he was very, very sharp at the time. So, I mean, he's got so many stories of photographing and working with the Weiders. And he could tell you the early stories about the Weiders and stuff. And for me, it'd be a shame to lose that knowledge Jimmy has without having some kind of an interview with him. Whether he will or not, I don't know, but no harm in trying if you're interested. But I will see if I can find the number.
Absolutely,
And send it to him. So,
I appreciate that,
We've had a good run tonight. Appreciate you taking the time and getting in touch with me and doing another interview. I hope we got enough stuff of interest to your listeners.
Absolutely, yeah. It was great talking to you again, Gary. I'm glad you had the time to come back on the show. I haven't talked to you in a while, so it was great catching up on some of those old stories. So maybe I'll see you at the Olympia this year if you go out there.
I might possibly, because, you know, it's very possible it may be the last year they'll have it in Vegas. I mean, they could move it somewhere else.
Yeah, start moving it around. Right.
I heard there was talk. It's possible. Is it? For me, Vegas is the best place for it, but, I mean, it would depend, I guess, on Dan and Jake where they want to go with it. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, what happens with it. And if Phil Heath and Flex decide to go in, it might be worth seeing this year. I wonder how Sean's going to make out with. Have you heard anything about his case or where that's at these days?
No, I don't know anything about that. So I'll find out when I go to the Arnold this year.
Yeah, whether he's going to make it back or not onto the stage. So anyway, I'll be listening for your podcast, John, and listen, you take care, buddy.
Right.
I really appreciate
you too, Gary.
A lot of fun chatting with you.
Yeah, we appreciate you coming on. I really do. Thanks a lot, Gary.
You're welcome, and have a good night.
All right, you too. Take care.
Bye.
All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Be sure to check out the links below. Check out my website, johnhansonfitness.com. I have my upcoming seminar in a couple of weeks if you guys want to sign up for it. The link is right there. Or if you want any help with your training or nutrition, go to johnhansonfitness.com, and I would be happy to help you guys out. Thank you to our Patreon sponsors for helping to sponsor this podcast. If you guys are interested in helping to sponsor the podcast with a small monthly donation, you can just go to the website, bodybuildinglegendshow.com, and in the upper right-hand corner is the Patreon button. Just click on that, and you can donate as little or as much as you like, and I appreciate you guys considering that. All right, before we end the show, I want to read this article that was sent to us by our friend Pat Comer This is from, I believe, the 1979 issue of Muscle Builder magazine, and it is an article that was originally printed in the Herald Examiner, and the writer was Wanda McDaniel. Here it is. It's all about Arnold. It's called Pumping Arnold. Shecky Green, Arnold Schwarzenegger, both appearing on the Merv Griffin Show. I can't believe it, Arnold. You can talk. Bodybuilding changed me entirely. I think I would be a different person now if I never trained, if I just worked somewhere. It gave me confidence and pride and an unlimited positive attitude. I can apply my success to everything. The same with business. I'm so determined to make millions of dollars that I cannot fail. In my mind, I've already made the millions. Now it's just a matter of going through the motion. Arnold Schwarzenegger in his book, Arnold, The Education of a Bodybuilder. It is midday and sunless in Venice as wispy swipes of fog continue to roll overhead like a giant dry ice machine on high. This beach community is quiet today. The roller skaters have stayed home and the sand and surf set have abandoned their turf, wrapped up somewhere inland, awaiting more blissful, brighter days. The noisy tourist season is gone too. Main Street Venice has all the trappings of an exceedingly fashionable ghost town, set for a sleepy few months' snooze. And then along came Arnold, punctuating the damp, dew air with 215 pounds of the world's most famous muscles. The bright boy of the barbells is taking command of the street as if he owns it, part of which he does. He has descended from his spacious, beautifully wood-appointed second-floor suite of offices on Main and is smoothly charming the teeth off anyone who crosses his path. A bookshop owner gets teased. A local businessman shares a joke. A restaurant owner punches the air with a wildly waving arm and smiles. The Schwarzenegger swagger is busily bathing them all in playful, scampish attention. The effortless charisma is fairly oozing now, cranked into full gear. And Arnold's army, if you will, simply can't get enough from their boy with the brawn. I always tell people I'm just a beach bum, grinned Arnold, settling down for lunch at Cafe California. I really don't have a professional job. I'm self-employed, and things are changing all the time. One minute I'll be writing a book, then I'll be doing a film, then I'll be producing the world championships in bodybuilding. At the same time, I always have to take care of my mail order business and my real estate and investments. Then I'll be writing stories for some muscle magazine, or I'll be off working for ABC Sports as one of their expert commentators. So I would never exactly say I do this and that. My day is filled with work, but there's not a certain thing I do all the time. People always ask me to tell them about a normal day in the life of Arnold Schwarzenegger. There is no such thing. He's right. As a matter of fact, there aren't too many things typical about this 31-year-old bachelor, who on one hand swears his professional bodybuilding days are behind him, but on the other hand, he claims that he has only just begun pumping the irons of fame and fortune. He says he is definitely convinced he has done more to further the industry of muscle than anything in its history. Yet time has come to move on and up, to broaden the horizons, to jump the boundaries. And if he has it his way, Arnold Schwarzenegger will grab and get whatever he wants. Arnold, the empire builder, the bodybuilder retired, selects a table on the patio, and he goes about ordering wine and an average-sized lunch with total command and panache. No, he will not be wolfing down two salads, three entrees, and four desserts. And no, there isn't a solitary thing about him resembling a beach bum, sun-streaked hair and bronze biceps not counting. Rather, the Arnold Schwarzenegger of today is a driven businessman and a budding actor, so intent on stardom to have taken voice lessons to file away the rough edges of his once thick Austrian accent. He is a man powerfully in control of himself, working toward the same kind of omnipotence over his destination. He is a darling of the gossip columns and a dater of the jet set. He is a finely tuned self-promotion machine, a personality with a press agent. He is the absolute positive thinker who plugs his ears to the word no. He is a handsome, secure, confident man having the time of his life. He is a puissant presence, and he knows it. He is charming, and he knows it. He is bright and articulate, and he knows that too. Asked if he, in addition, is conceited, a look of befuddlement crosses his fair-skinned face. No, he replies, reflecting for a few seconds and seeming to almost pout over the idea that someone would actually ask him such a thing. People are afraid of being proud of what they are. I was the best in the world, he says. It's anti-hero time. There's a socialist attitude in America that is taking away all our heroes. You can't express yourself anymore about the way you really feel and about how good you really are.
I will always fight to be the best, the winner in whatever I do. And I do win most of my fights. Reporter, since you were 15, for more than a decade, bodybuilding was your life, your career, your ticket. How is your hindsight on that subject today? Arnold, bodybuilding was a form of expression for me, a way to be cocky and a kind of really let the people know what I thought of myself. You thought you were pretty good? I thought I was the best. Not only the best, I thought I was so far ahead of everyone that no one could compare me to anyone else. Were you right? Yeah, it was like Arnold was coming here to win, so everyone just worried about who's going to play second or third. I arrived to win at those competitions. I always won all the first place votes. How did that feel? It felt good. I wanted to let people know that. I would love to pose and smile and do the whole number. It's difficult to go out there and say, I'm the best, because people interpret it wrong. They think you're cocky or you have a big ego. Well, were you the best? Oh, definitely. No question about it. Lunching with Arnold Schwarzenegger is a visual experience. The muscles are purposely hidden these days beneath shirt sleeves custom made to fit the form. The hair is already graying a bit at the temples, as enormous bear hands and a tree trunk fingers constantly comb a thatch of light brown locks. The eyes glisten and smile and stare with Buddha-like intensity when assisting in making a strong point stronger. The legs, bulging inside of fashionably cut tan cotton slacks, are stretched out in all their glory, horizontal on the patio bench. Veins seem to explode from the exposed crossed ankles, disappearing into a well-used pair of running shoes. The face appears lean, almost hungry. The jawline is square and masculine, the chin jutting to just the right pronounced angle. The cheekbones are chiseled, the teeth pepsodent perfect. There are no gold chains at the neck, not even a watch, only a simple silver ring at the right ring finger. I can never identify what it really is that people like about me, because there are a few things that are different about me than most men don't have, like the accent, the physical development, the personality, immodestly explained Schwarzenegger. Yeah, I think I'm sexy, but it depends on the girl. A girl has to have chemistry that makes me sexy. It can't just be the way you look because your looks change. But women are afraid of saying they like you for your body. They think this is a no-no. They think it's okay for a man to say you have great breasts or a great ass, but women are still not that comfortable with saying, I love your body and that's why I like you. So they come up with things like, I think you're a wonderful person, or what I really like about you is that you have your mind going right along with your body, which is all a bunch of crap. Yeah, it's fine being a wonderful person, but people who haven't met me don't know if I'm a wonderful person. It's like this. If some wonderful person and I were sitting next to each other, the woman would pick me because they like my body. I know. It happens all the time. Do women flirt with you? Yeah. Do they come on strong? Yeah. So what do you do about that? I enjoy it. You see, one of the top priorities of men is that they are wanted by women and that they have something to offer to women and all that stuff. I also look at it from a business point of view. There are the women who will buy something from you because they like you. They will buy my book on women and fitness when it comes out in the spring. And that's good. They'll see my films, they'll go to my seminars, and they'll do everything to support me. What that does is make me feel, wow, good. Even though you lost 40 pounds and the muscles have shrunk proportionally, aren't some people put off by your physique? Oh no, never. Although I've heard a lot of people talk and wonder about it, some say it seems like a lot, and it's usually something for people to get used to, but usually it just makes people insecure about their own physical development, which is wrong. People always think they have to be in shape to deal with me. That's wrong. I don't care. I just hope they know enough about fitness and health to know that they're damaging themselves. Do you think people want their bodies to look like yours? Sure, but they have to understand that bodybuilding has been my profession for many years. It's a competitive sport, and I don't expect people to look like me. My body has never had an effect on any relationship I've had. But I'd like to say that I'm very glad people don't look like me, because then I wouldn't be special, right? Lunching with Arnold Schwarzenegger is also a mental extravaganza, or better yet, a delightfully one-sided conversation with the man with the muscles masterfully dominating the controls. Shifting from a soberly serious tack to a teasing and humorous mood, and then to a verbal barrage drenched in self-importance, the interesting thing about a talk with Schwarzenegger is that it's somehow he gets away with whatever he wishes to spout. Statements brimming with contradiction go totally unchallenged. Gab, fairly dripping in extraordinarily pomposity, isn't even considered disputable, let alone overdrawn. The funny fact of the matter is that Arnold can and does flat away get away with conversational murder.
Blame it on his distracting body landscape, or his lyrical soothing accent, or the fact that the guy has done so blessed many talk shows and interviews that he's become a premier media manipulator. The bottom line, however, is that Arnold Schwarzenegger is as slick as the body oil that once shimmered from a serratus anterior. He is a clever flirt who weaves a bewitching little spell at the precise time he wants it to occur. The body, the poise, the tease, the talk, the combination is captivating. Now toss into the pot the fact that Arnold is smart, period. Arnold does not flex and grunt and smile and shimmer. He has a brain, clicking on and off the hypnotism, being the businessman now, being the body man next. One minute he's thoughtfully talking art, the next he's pinching the cheek of a waitress. And thanks to those brains behind that brawn, every last bit of it works outrageously well to create a horde of Arnold Schwarzenegger, yes, men and women. When I came to live in this country in 1968, I could not speak the language well at all. I couldn't listen to the news. I couldn't read the papers. I came with no money at all. And the second day I was here, I got beaten in the Mr. Universe contest. It was the most difficult period of my life, remembers Arnold. But he knew he had a good product, himself, his body. And he knew he had a mind keen on business, a mind that had started exercising its business sense at age 10 when he worked school vacations in order to buy a bicycle and skis. I knew personality and the body were part of it, but you have to be smart to succeed at anything. So I began looking at myself as the product, treating myself as a product to be marketed in a business-like way. After taking home every major bodybuilding trophy several times over, Schwarzenegger hired a press agent in 1974. By 1977, the film documenting his saga as a muscle man, Pumping Iron, was garnering a cult following in movie houses across the country. Then came his best-selling book, Arnold, The Education of a Bodybuilder, for which he just completed a nationwide tour touting the just-released paperback version. Now there's another movie called Villain, starring Kirk Douglas and Anne Margaret, in which he plays the Western comedy role of the handsome stranger. Plus, there's his other movie commitment due this spring, along with the publication of his next book dealing with women and fitness. I absolutely love to work, says the actor author, now toying with a bowl of strawberries and sending the waitress off for a cup of coffee. I can relax at work. I'm sort of hung up on not wasting my time. The problem is that we don't have enough time in life. I want to push everything in without losing too much of the quality. In a material sense, there is quality everywhere around him. A 1978 Mercedes 619 sits in the garage, and a giant Kentucky country bed, custom built, looms impressively in his large Santa Monica apartment. His mailbox is jammed with invitations to Hollywood parties, most of which he never attends because those parties are just dress-up time with people walking around trying to impress each other. But the invitations keep coming. Arnold, the man who claims he hasn't had a tape measure in his hand for 3 years, has become a celebrity beyond the barbells. Yeah, I like being a celebrity. I use it 100%. And I get a lot of joy out of it, he unabashedly admits, crinkling his nose. It's great when you call a restaurant and it's all filled up, and then you say a party of four for Arnold Schwarzenegger, and they say, of course. It has many positive sides to it. It's okay as long as you don't take it too seriously, as long as you don't look at yourself as a special or different from anybody else. The fact is that you're just created as a celebrity. You have to keep that in proportion, or you'll end up running around thinking you're King Kong. The contradiction here is that just about everything he does, Schwarzenegger really is different from everybody else, and he knows that, and he knows how he made that happen. After you're focused in, you must have an enormous want power. Then you need willpower to follow it through. Then you have to think positive and program yourself to be a winner. I am simply not programmed to think bad thoughts. I've seen people move mountains. I think, wow, I can do that too. You can't be afraid of making a decision and sticking to it, going all the way. That's one of the basic things successful people have. They have the ability to take a risk and make a tough decision no matter what everyone around them says. Today, Arnold Schwarzenegger is the most famous man in the history of bodybuilding. He still works out with the weights 1 hour, 5 or 6 times a week, and religiously runs 5 miles a day. But building a body big and brawny is not his focus anymore. Instead, he's out to make millions, because money is easy to make and it can mean everything, and to keep running and reaching for his goals. I don't think I'll ever reach any of my goals entirely. I expand all the time, like with bodybuilding. I now see my role expanded to that of as an ambassador for fitness. I always talk to people about how important it is to keep in shape, and how little time it really takes to stay fit. I love my work, and I love my leisure time. I like to go dancing, to shows, to an art auction, or riding horses. I like to keep growing by having really progressive people as friends. You can feed off their spirit. I hope to someday grow into a marriage and have children. Right now, I'm all over the place, traveling all the time. But that's just another one of my future goals. I guess you could just say that Arnold has plans for moving mountains. Make that a lot of mountains. Reporter, are people afraid of you? Arnold, why should they be? Reporter, let's just say you cut a pretty imposing figure. Arnold, oh, don't you like me? Reporter, yes, I like you. Arnold, are you afraid of me? Reporter, no, I'm not afraid of you. Arnold, see what I mean? Reporter, you really always do win, don't you? Arnold, yeah. All right, that was reprinted by permission from the Los Angeles Herald Examiner in 1978. Not 1979, it was 1978. All right, Pat Comer, thank you for sending that out. I really enjoyed reading that. I remember reading that when I was a kid, when I bought Muscle Builder magazine, and it was great reading about the great Arnold again from an old magazine. I'll try to get some more of these old magazines and read them to you guys each week. If you enjoy that, let me know. Send me an email at naturalolympia@gmail.com. And if you're going to be at the Arnold next weekend and you see me, come by and say hi. And I will be there, like I said, from Thursday to Sunday, covering all the big events. All right, that's it for the show. Thanks again to Florida Alternative Medicine and Old School Labs for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. We will see you guys next week. Take care.